Hi everyone, my name is Chris and I am host of the Stellar Spark Show. I am here again with Joey. He's from New Jersey. Remember, we had him last time back in January, so I'd like to welcome him back to the show. And the floor is yours, Joey.
Hey Chris, good to be back, man. Thank you for having me back on again. I appreciate it.
It's no problem at all. We're going to go ahead and get started. We're going to do the same format as we did last time. I wanted to ask you a few questions about what has been going on recently. I'm going to ask you about five questions, but we're going to go right down the list. The first question being, how do you think the COVID pandemic will be remembered? What will its impact upon American life be?
Well, that's a good question, Chris. When I was doing some analysis with the pandemic and everything, I think politically it's going to be looked at, you know, in a variety of different ways, because you have to remember, when we look back at the Trump administration, you know, there was all kinds of hysteria, disinformation again with... Right. Mass information that was, you know, unconfirmed through many sources. A lot of people, you know, were taught to believe that, you know, it was firstly like some kind of a myth. Trump, quote, was saying, as he was quoted as saying, it will disappear in a matter of days, unquote. He said a lot of things that were very inaccurate. A lot of his claims going back to his administration weren't exactly factual in the pandemic and what it really was going to do, because at that time, we're talking like maybe like a little over a year ago, nobody really had any idea what was going to happen and how things were going to play out with this virus. So I think at first, initially in the political arena, it's kind of complicated, because, you know, it's going to be seen as kind of a difficult thing at first. But I think when we got the new administration with Biden, now I think we're starting to clear things up. So I think it's more of politically set in stages. So with the first stage being with Trump that came in, you know, it was going to be seen as, like I said again, like a kind of a myth, some kind of a folk tale or some kind of a thing he made up in his head. And then the whole controversy with the Lysol, injecting bleach into your veins, that was definitely disastrous. And, you know, we go from that and then to, you know, the Biden and Kamala Harris presidency, you know, where we're actually taking the steps to understand the virus. You know, people are getting vaccinated. People are doing testing. You know, a lot of things are, you know, being handled more efficiently now. You know, people are actually understanding the facts. And I think towards the latter part of this pandemic, I think overall it'll be remembered as something that was initially tragic, because obviously a lot of lives have been lost. You know, I think it was a couple million people worldwide have passed away from this virus, and you know, can't bring those people back, and it's obviously tragic. But important thing is that we were able to hold on. You know, we became more unified than ever before. You know, we were able to reconnect with our families, you know, rediscover what meaningful homes were. And I think we were able to grow, you know, stronger as a nation as a result. So I think overall it'll be seen as something that brought people together, despite all of the, you know, tragedy that was associated with it at first.
Sure, absolutely. Definitely ravaged a lot of places. And I remember we were talking about this a few months ago in terms of the economic impact as well, but definitely caused a lot of tragedies across the world, especially here in the U.S. You were talking about a little bit about the history since last year, and there was a lot of mixed messaging in the Trump administration about this, because Trump really tried to play this down. He tried not to make people panic, but that made people feel like that he wasn't taking this seriously enough. And then with the new administration, Biden's trying to do more of a federal response and have more of a federal plan to deal with the virus first before reopening the economy. So that's really where we're at now with that. In the future, I think this period is going to be remembered as pretty perilous, a time where that American strength is being realized, because it's going to take everything to get past this period, a dark period in American history. But we're all getting through it, and it's definitely changed some things politically as well, because now it's mostly about, for the Republican Party, it's mostly about Trump's legacy, and in the Democratic Party, they seem unified, ready to take on the challenges from day one, really. They were ready to come in and address a lot of these priorities. But as far as COVID, things are getting better. Things have gotten much better in terms of the vaccination response and the coordination. Many Americans have their first vaccine. I personally have the second vaccine. I have both vaccines. So getting vaccinated is definitely going to help us return to some sense of normalcy in the country, where we could effectively gather again safely. So that's really something to look forward to going forward. But I have no doubt that we'll emerge stronger than ever before from this pandemic. So appreciate that response on that one.
Of course.
Moving to the second question, so this is about the economy. So just to set the background for this question, there's been a lot of spending that has been going on right now to address some of the economic fallout from the pandemic, because it disrupted supply chains, caused a lot of businesses to shutter and close, really caused a lot of lost revenue. People saved a lot more. So it caused a depression. It caused another depression. It caused a recession. Now we're getting out of it. But what do you think of the Biden administration's efforts to increase spending right now? Is that the right course of action in order to spend with the stimulus plan that was passed recently this year? Is that, in your view, something that should have been done?
Yes, I believe so. But before I go into this analysis, I kind of have a mixed opinion on this topic. But just sure. To give an introduction, you know, we obviously know that a lot of people over the last, you know, year due to the pandemic, you know, a lot of people have lost their jobs. A lot of people were unable to pay their rent, you know, all kinds of different things. So I think the stimulus package in that sense was a good move on Biden's part to, of course, you know, maintain his reputation, you know, as a new, you know, positive force for the country. But at the same time, even though there's people that are getting money now through the government and people are able to, you know, pay off their bills, you know, and, you know, deal with things that they have been behind with for a long time, The issue presents itself when, you know, now you have to look at, well, we got to look at the responsibility of the people. So the issue is, with this money that people are getting now through these stimulus checks, now it's like up to choice. So you have people now who, you know, are taking this money from the government, and, you know, some people are just being, in my opinion, you know, kind of reckless with it, because there's a few people, you know, that have been just buying all kinds of different things, and there's been people that have been out of work, and they're relying on the stimulus checks to supplement their income instead of going back to work in order to, you know, maintain a job. So the issue is, there's a lot of people that aren't coming back to work. So I think that's one of the cons of the stimulus package. Right. So now, you know, people are getting this money and you're thinking, well, okay, so I got, you know, however much the stimulus check was, a couple thousand. So I'm like, yeah, I'm going to chill for a little bit. You know, I don't really need to do anything right now. I'm going to just ride this out. But what they fail to realize is eventually that money is going to run out. And you don't have a job, if you don't have a job by then, you know, what are you going to do now? And, you know, you're stuck now. You're back in the same cycle again, having to figure things out when you have little to no money. And that one opportunity you could have took to take that money and stash it for emergency and get a job, now you've squandered it on, let's say, for instance, a PlayStation 5 or a new pair of shoes or maybe another TV or something like that. Right. So I know at the end of the day, obviously, you know, we can't tell people how to spend their money, but This is just something that I have definitely noticed. And I think what's also, that's something that's also been going on, you know, in the job market recently.
Right. Appreciate that answer as well. So yes, increased spending. There's a few things that goes along with that. You mentioned the people being out of work and relying on that, and that was the purpose of it initially. But a lot of governors and states have decided not to comply with some of this federal unemployment insurance, with the benefits to opt out of them, because they believe that it disincentivizes people to work because they're relying on those benefits. And at some point, we're going to have to go back to normal, and those are not going to be needed anymore. So that is preventing people from getting back to work right now, but it is necessary, it's definitely necessary in order to help stabilize the economy during this period, right? Also, the second part of that, you mentioned people spending on different things, right? So that's part of like discretionary consumer spending. Like we can't tell people like, well, you have to buy this or save this amount of money, because then the government's really centralizing its power and controlling the economy. And we don't really have that here in America. We have a capitalistic system. So I'm glad you pointed that out as well, because it's up to the people. It's up to the free market to decide all of that. How things are going to be allocated, resources are going to be allocated, what is going to be produced. And a lot of people say, due to more money being in circulation, this increased spending is causing a higher inflation rate right now because there's more money out there. But some other people say it's because of increased demand for products, which is going to bring the prices up. So it could be one or both, but the main thing is that the economy is slowly recovering. That's indicative of an economic recovery, that once you have all of these projects and invest in the public works, that things are going to get better because of the increased government spending. That is one policy that has been effective the last time around with the Recovery Act under the Obama administration. And it should be effective this time around. We'll see what the lasting effects are on the American economy from this plan. But once again, thank you for that. I'm going to move on to the third one, third question. So in light of mass shootings, so switching gears a little bit here to crime. In light of mass shootings and increased violent crime in inner cities, what can be done to curtail that epidemic so to bring that level of violent crime down, in your view?
See, that's a very complicated question, Chris. I'm glad you pointed that out. You know, obviously, mass shootings have been, it's been an issue for decades in our country. And, you know, it's a lot of factors involved, because you have to look at it from a variety of different ways. So when you see, you know, what goes on in these, you know, mass shootings and whatever, you have to look at all the dynamics. So first, you know, there's the Second Amendment, which is the right to bear arms. Right. And, you know, a lot of, you know, primarily right-wing activism and activists primarily rely on that principle to, you know, maintain their gun ownership. And it gets kind of messy when politics gets involved, because now we have to figure out how we can, you know, deal with that and kind of put like a lid on the cap of the issue. Mm-hmm. However, beside the Second Amendment, now you have other organizations like the NRA, right, who, you know, is a big gun, you know, organization. Right. They have a lot of influence on, you know, the guns and what goes on, and they have a lot of power also politically. So when you look at those things, I feel like that is a part of the issue that we deal with. And I think the other thing that we are not doing is we have to look at it from a mental health standpoint, because there are lots of people, you know, who commit mass shootings and so whatever. There's a bit of a pattern. And the pattern is, a lot of these, individuals have troubled backgrounds. They have issues with mental health, and for whatever reason, they never got the help that they needed. And unfortunately, it always takes some kind of a tragedy or some kind of a horrific event, like a shooting, to kind of bring the light back on it. But the thing that is very frustrating, at least from my observations in my years, is that it seems to be a cycle. We talk about how we should have better gun control. We talk about how we should, understand the root of the issue, but for some reason, it just never seems to get to the forefront. And it takes like another incident, where people are innocently gunned down and murdered for that to come back into the discussion. And I think that's also part of the complicated issue. So we have to, evaluate the situation with that and understand how we can better control the guns. So
absolutely.
I'm pretty sure, if I'm not mistaken, I think Biden has said maybe a few brief points about gun control in his administration thus far. And I think, he's trying to take like a bit of a, not like too much of a, like a too much of a powerful stand on it, like an authoritative stand on it. But like, I think he's trying to just get like the conversation back up. That way he can get Congress to kind of do what they need to do to pass some legislation to, I think, kind of calm this whole thing down, because things have just been wild with these shootings lately. There was like a couple hundred shootings in Chicago and Philadelphia and all over the country in the past couple of months. And, I think we need to reevaluate the issue on what goes on. So I think that obviously starts with gun control. So with that, going back to President Biden, I think he's going to have to take more of a powerful stand on that topic to really bring light onto that issue and to get some legislation passed to, kind of get the ball rolling to not when we like solve the problem, but just to get the steps in play so that way we can figure out, the main root cause of the problem and eventually, just kind of like maybe like mitigate it to an extent.
Well, absolutely. I agree with that. That this is a complex problem. Mass shootings, I kind of separate both of those in the two different categories. So mass shootings are one, and then violent crime in inner cities, that's like a different issue. So right, for the first one, it does seem to be a pattern that these individuals that are committing these mass shootings lack the access or resources to mental health treatment. So that has to be addressed firstly. I think it's a mental health issue. And then secondly would be gun control for me. I would say that based on what President Biden has been saying, he's in favor of an assault weapons ban. And the assault weapons ban was in place back in the 1990s under President Clinton. And he's thinking about bringing that back. That likely wouldn't get through Congress, though, because it's a 50-50 Senate right now. So it'd be hard to get anything passed. But that was one of the things that had some evidence to drive mass shootings down a bit. I remember that I believe I did a video and a podcast episode about gun control. So my viewers are pretty familiar with that issue and my stance on that. But yeah, the mass shootings issue has to be dealt with, I think, with mental health first and then gun control second. The second part, as it relates to the violent crime in inner cities, that's more about getting the guns off the street and enforcing the law, because in a lot of these inner cities, that's not really being done, and we have varying sentencing guidelines. I know that in Philly, it has been one of the most deadly years since the 1990s. There were about 499 homicides last year. In 1990, there were 500 that year or so. It's the second deadliest year since 1960 in that span. So it's been a very deadly year or two. And it's extremely unfortunate for the lives that were lost. But it's really going to start with what I just said. So making sure that there's expanded access to mental health, whether that's having community centers run by the state to provide state funding for that, increased state funding for that. And then gun control, if Biden wants to address that, even if it's an executive order on the issue, if he can't get it passed through Congress first, he should try to issue an executive order relating to gun control in order to curtail some of these mass shootings that we've been seeing. So that is what I'm thinking there for that one, that some action needs to be taken there. It's become too commonplace, and I remember during the 2010s, during the Obama administration, these things happened as well with Sandy Hook and other places. And there was talk about reinstating the assault weapons ban then, and obviously that discussion has been reignited now in recent years here, in the recent days too. So thank you for that response on that one. So moving on to my fourth question here. So what do you think of the demographic changes going on in America? So the way America is changing, do you think there will be a future president of a Hispanic or Asian background? I know we've had our first African-American president. And so do you think there will be a future president of a different minority background?
Yes, I confidently will agree, yes, and believe that, yes, I believe that we will have a president of Asian or Hispanic or any other type of racial background in the future. Because, you know, inevitably, you know, the future, you know, is cohesive. And, you know, with all of the things that's going on, you know, socially, you know, overall as a nation, we're becoming more accepting. You know, we're accepting of other people's backgrounds, identities, and cultures. So I think in time, like I said, I'm very confident that we will have a president who represents that and will also be of all kinds of races in the future.
Right.
Because we've just recently elected a black female to vice president, you know, so I think if we can do that, I think anything is possible, and I will be very happy to see that if I have the possibility to, and I would hope that, you know, in the future, you know, everybody of different racial backgrounds and identities and cultures can have that opportunity, because, you know, we're better together. And, you know, I know I said this in my last podcast back in January, but, you know, we're all stronger together. And I think the more that we accept each other's, you know, distinctions, the better we are as a nation. So I think in a positive way, yes, we definitely will have someone like that in the future. And hopefully we'll get to witness that soon.
Yeah, exactly. Totally agree with that. Cultural pluralism is totally welcome. We need to embrace the differences of everyone involved in order to forge a better future for ourselves and for our posterity. I think that is really important, cannot be understated. As far as the demographic changes go in America, in this country by 2050, the majority of the population will be Hispanic. So that's an interesting fact. And the 2020 census results have been completed, and the population is steadily increasing. So there's more people coming in, and the nation's becoming more culturally diverse. So we have to be more tolerant. We have to work together in order to meet a mutual goal, in order to be really effective in our mission. As Americans, and who we want to be on the world stage, because if there's a lot of fighting among us, we really can't be successful. And that's really important. because we've been seeing it over the last few decades with some of the unrest between a lot of races, a lot of racial tensions and polarization that really needs to be moved past if we're going to be unified. But to answer the second part of that question, do you think there will be a future president of Hispanic or Asian background? I also think there will be at some point as the country changes and the Hispanic population becomes the majority, in especially in a lot of states, because looking at this electorally, the states that come to mind to me the most with that have to be the western states like Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, Colorado, and Nevada. And those states are going to become more important in terms of the political landscape, in terms of the geography. We're probably going to see a Hispanic president be for one of those states, if I had to take a guess. As far as Asian or other backgrounds, I think that it's definitely possible as well. I mean, we had a candidate who was Asian in the 2020 race. We had Andrew Yang, who's now running for New York City mayor.
Yes.
So he is still running for that, and he was on the national scene. He was on the national forefront. So he's the first person I can remember of Asian descent to run for president. And he really galvanized a lot of people's support for him, especially online. So I do think, if not Yang, someone else that's going to generate a really large following in order to win the presidency. So no doubt a president of a minority background is going to happen in the near future. All right. So thank you for that one. All right, well, the last and most, probably the most important question today that we're going to get to, and a very complicated question indeed. So what needs to be done to combat structural racism? And in your view, what do you think can be done, some steps to combat structural racism?
Well, Chris, firstly, we need some perspective. So in terms of recent events, I'm sure you are familiar with the Derek Chauvin verdict that was finalized last month in the
yes.
murder of George Floyd. So I believe he was guilty on all three counts that was involved in the case. So I think that case alone is a good start recently in terms of the subcategory of police shootings for structural racism. So I think that's a good first step to identify that. And then to elaborate further on that, we also need to identify what exactly structural racism is. So we have to look at the different systems that are in place in our government to get a better understanding of, you know, what exactly, you know, that is and what we face. So in order to combat that and to eventually, you know, get to a better positioning on that, we have to, firstly, like I said, we need to identify the systems, and then once we identify those systems, we need to get the appropriate people in place who are willing to hold certain individuals in power, you know, accountable for the things right. that are carried out, that trickle down, that affect certain people of minority groups. So to go further into that, another category would have to be maybe the employment to an extent, and there's a lot of work that still needs to be done. But I think, like I said, with the George Floyd verdict, that was, like I said, a first step. And we have to firstly go into different categories with that. So backtracking to what I said earlier, there's different categories. So we have to look at the police violence. We have to look at the social media, all the things that go on there. Mm-hmm. And now, I'm sure as you're aware, Chris, we also have to identify what has been happening to the Asian and Asian American communities recently, right. because there have been a number of you know, hate crimes and attacks that have been perpetrated by all kinds of different people against Asian Americans. So we also need to look at, you know, things that affect them now, because this it's now becoming a part of the bigger scope of the issue. So I think once we understand like how these things came to be more clearly in the future, I think then we can take the steps to eventually, you know, just getting everything back to a more unified kind of cohesion.
Right. Absolutely agree with that as well. Again, so here with this question, structural racism. So it's embedded at every fabric of the society. I believe that we have to get everyone involved. It's going to take everyone to dismantle that. It's going to be a process. It's a really unfortunate situation that's been going on for far too long, because it limits opportunity. We say we're the land of opportunity, but yet we're limiting opportunity pretty tacitly. We're not saying we do that, but that's what happens because of the system that is perpetuated. So we have to ensure that people feel safe in their communities. People feel safe in their person and doing everyday things, that they shouldn't feel threatened because of anything, because of their background, that they're going to be targeted. As an example, you mentioned the Asian hate, Asian violence that has been going on in this country, that that should be totally denounced, because you have anger against a certain group of people for something they did not do, or just because they're of one origin, right? So that's what's been going on with that, to address that. And then in another regard, with the back to the Chauvin trial, as you were talking about, so, yes, he was convicted on all charges, and I believe I did a podcast about that as well. And I discussed the verdict and what it meant for me and what I saw it meant for minority communities, because it's really important. It's a first step. There's definitely more progress to be made there in that effort to make sure that police are doing what they're supposed to be doing as stewards of the public trust and not abusing that trust for their own personal gain or to exert power over another group of people that they shouldn't be doing. So that's really important to stamp that out, whether it's a retraining of the police, whether it's interacting with the community in a better way, community policing, in terms of policing. But racism is present in other areas, from workplace discrimination to housing and a myriad of other areas that has to be combated. And it starts really with everyone. Everyone has to realize it exists, that it's there, and to work together in order to replace that system with a better system. And I believe that that can be accomplished, but everyone has to be committed to that goal and to support those that are being discriminated against.
Yes.
All right. So once again, I appreciate your responses to all these questions. That is all the time that we have today. I would like to thank you again, Joe. I really appreciate you coming on the show. Your perspectives are wonderful. Your insights are really great. It helps really shine some light on some of these issues that really couldn't be done without you. So thank you again.
And I would like to thank you again, Chris, for having me on the show. You know, it's always a pleasure, like being able to have a platform to discuss these issues and to be able to elaborate on some, you know, hard things that we, you know, we deal with in our day-to-day life. And, you know, I just hope you continue the good work that you've been doing and that you continue to have a positive impact on not only your community, but, you know, the world.
Absolutely. Yes, that's part of the larger mission to change these things that really need to be changed. So again, thank you, and thank you all for listening today. Again, this is Joey, and we're grateful to have him on the show once again. All right. Like to thank you all for listening today, and Joey, would you like to share any final thoughts?
Actually, yes. You know, it's just this has been a pleasure just being able to talk and just to be able to have a voice to really talk about these things. I'm just grateful that there's people who are, you know, willing to listen to perspectives from all kinds of backgrounds. And, you know, I just hope in the future that, you know, everybody can just one day, you know, just, you know, be civil and be able to, you know, just better the community and, you know, each in their own respective ways from the gifts that God has given them. And I just wish everybody who's listening, thank you again for listening to me, and may you all have a wonderful day.
All right. Thank you for listening again to us here today. This has been the Stellar Spark Show. My name is Chris, and we had Joey again as a guest. So definitely looking forward to having you on the show once more in the future. Thank you all for listening.